I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, and welcome to the New European Podcast. My name is Richard Porritt, and I'm joined, as ever, by Steve Anglesey.
Hello, snowflakes. Hello, Richard.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm well.
Yeah.
I'm slightly worried about no deal. I'm slightly worried about COVID-19.
Yeah.
I'm slightly worried about Manchester City.
Do you think we should try
caring about the New York Jets, to be fair.
Well, when the New York Jets are getting beaten by the Denver Broncos, who are my team, and the Jets are your team, then you really are in a bad position, aren't you?
Yeah, I was expecting this season to be completely hopeless, but not quite as hopeless as not quite the raging tire fire that... I mean, I think the only thing that could be worse now is if they put Donald Trump in charge of... which, of course, it could happen because the
could,
New York Jets owned by Woody Johnson, who is Donald Trump's ambassador to the UK.
Yeah. Well, the New York Jets export to the UK last Thursday night was not up to much. But I, without wanting this to become an NFL podcast, I still think that Sam Darnold is a very talented quarterback and you need to build around him.
Yeah, he's just not got the parts around him, and he's looking at him, he's making a few dodgy decisions, just like you are making it, thinking you've made a dodgy decision, New European podcast listener, by listening to us ramble on about American football. Anyway, it's been an exciting week, hasn't it?
Well, every week is exciting, not always for the right reasons. We will, of course, dear listener, bring you the news shortly. However, I think we're back to a stage now where you definitely need to be checking other news sources. I know a lot of you come here just for your news. Please do check in with the New European and the New European's website, because I think we're on the brink of some more stringent lockdown measures. We will also crown a Brexiteer of the Week, Steve.
Of course, we will.
In between the news and the Brexiteer of the Week, we will ramble, which is what we do best. So what's caught your eye this week, Steve?
Well, obviously, Donald Trump has just been a remarkable thing. And we will talk about Donald Trump more towards the end of the show, I think. I'll tell you some things that have caught my eye. Keir Starmer has caught my eye this week. Did you see Keir Starmer's... What he said, I'm very disappointed about this and I take a dim view of it. Did you see what he was very disappointed about and took a dim view of?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a week of strange news, and I think that this was the decision by Arsenal, which I now think has been a U-turn to do away with Gunnosaurus, who is their rather odd mascot. Nice. I'm not quite sure why Arsenal have got a dinosaur as their... Do you? Is there a reason behind why they've got a dinosaur as their mascot?
No, I mean, there's no... You know, what's the... Why did West Brom have a combi boiler as their mascot for a couple of years?
Well, I've no idea, but that was brilliant and very funny. And it got me to thinking, actually, about what the New European Podcast mascot would be if we had... And maybe next time we have a live and... Please God, let it be soon, do a live pod, which are great fun to do when we get to actually meet you all in the pub afterwards, and you can fire questions at guests rather than us, because you know we're no experts. But I was thinking what it could be, and I think actually there should be two. There should be two mascots. What, have you got any thoughts about what our mascot could be?
I don't know. I thought I was our mascot.
Well, to some extent, I think that's true, because I think we should have a gloved Wang,
yes,
and a Night Fisher, and they could dance behind us. And, you know, if we say something good, they could cheer. And if we say something bad, they could put their head in their hands and sort of shake their head and, you know, make these big gestures. And also, I also think that I'd like to see, you know, they do the like mascot Olympics. Have you seen that?
Yes, that's right.
Where they get, I think the gloved Wang would be pretty good at the 100 metres dash.
It should, surely it should be a yellow hammer that said your catchphrase.
Yes, yes. A friend of mine told me a story the other day. We were talking about, if you don't know, because the yellow hammer is a bird which says, little bit of bread and no cheese, which is my alleged catchphrase, because the report on Brexit was called yellow hammer. A friend of mine who's a Norwich City fan was telling me the other day that he went on a tour of the stadium with his small children, and they walked past a cupboard, and the cupboard was open, and in there was the, I guess it must be a canary, the mascot, but it was all sort of just deflated and on the floor, obviously, because there was no one inside it, and the kids were distraught. I think they thought the mascot was actually real, and this was a dead mascot. So you've got to be careful with mascots, you know? And I'd love to go for a pint with an actual gloved Wang.
And
that would be good. If anyone would like to come along to our next live podcast and dress as a gloved Wang, I will pay your entry fee if you come along as a gloved Wang.
That would be amazing.
Of course, we've got to remain, there are taste and decency issues, so, you know, you've got to bear that in mind. But nonetheless, I think that would be, I think they would be good mascots for the new European podcast.
What about the new COVID safety measures in the Commons?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a workplace like any other. When I get up off away from my desk, we're all very much socially distanced in European Towers. When I get up from my desk and walk around the office,
is that just because you don't have any friends in the office?
It's not just in the office where I don't have any friends. It could be that. It could be that. It could be my lack of deodorant use. I don't know. But, you know, we all have to pop a mask on and keep our distance and stuff. So, yeah, I think it's... And I imagine, you know, we're in a nice modern office. I imagine it's probably a little bit more difficult. But I guess you're talking about actually in the chamber, yeah?
Yes, I am, yeah. They are in the chamber. There are some. There are about to be some new sort of safety measures unveiled. The Perspex screens are coming in front of the front benches, and there is some talk of MPs wearing masks. And you know what else has masks and Perspex screens? Well, I've said it on this podcast before. It's ice hockey. Just freeze over the middle of the Commons where that big bench is with all the stuff on it, the mace and that, and let them play ice hockey. It'd be fantastic.
And imagine there's a lot of fighting in ice hockey
Boris
as well.
Dropping their gloves and
yeah,
getting in there.
That'd be good. That'd be really good. And someone could play that organ.
During PMQs. I love all that. Absolutely love it. What about Boris's conference speech? Did you see that?
Conference season is a thing that I used to get really excited about. I'm a real saddo. Even when I was a teenager, I used to really like conference season. I'm not kidding, Steve. I'm really not. I used to dream of going to political conferences.
Did you?
Yeah, I mean, not like fall asleep. I used to want to go to them. I've been to loads now.
Is it Christmas Eve for you? I wonder what Jeffrey Howe is going to say tomorrow.
It was. But once you've been to a fair few, the shine and wonder does somewhat dissipate. But I've done a few years where I've done all three back to back to back, and in fact, you once sent me to a fourth one as well.
Yes,
you might remember.
The UK
I managed to get four in that year, I think. So it does, you know, they are difficult, but there is fun. There's fun to be had at political conference. You know, wild, mad things happen.
Yes, there's lots of drinking, isn't there?
There is a lot of drinking. And what you do is, you see, so you get about 10 days, 2 weeks before, you get a little conference like program and you look through and see what's happening. And some of the things are outside the secure area, and most of the decent things are inside. And the deal tends to be that you sit down and listen to some politicians rabbit on about their particular pet peeve or pet project for half an hour, and then you get free drinks. But if you time it right, you can pretty much go from all of them, cut out the speechy bit, and just arrive for the drinks. Now, that's all great, and you can see Conference Virgins doing that. But honestly, the level of quality of wine is so poor. It's like, some of it is like, I remember once, it would have been something like 2013. Oh, no, it would have been better than that. It was the year of the Scottish independence vote, actually, because Lib Dems were last, because they moved it because it was in Glasgow. And by the end of that conference, I honestly, if someone had offered me another glass of white wine, I would have punched him, I think. It's just the kind that the really sharp stuff, you know, that you get from a booze cruise to France and you get six bottles for 90p or whatever. It's that kind of stuff. But there are some good ones. The Port Authority always do a good one because they have sea shanties and free fish and chips and beer. That's good. Usually the ones to go to are the Diageo ones.
Right,
because the beer's free. There's usually some good karaoke.
I was going to say, have you ever been to the karaoke? Because obviously that the clip of Matt Hancock, and it's Therese Coffey, isn't it? Mm. Therese Coffey, rather. That clip is from last year, is doing the rounds again, which if you've not seen it, it is on the New European social feeds, but it's Matt Hancock and Therese Coffey from last year's Tory conference, and they're singing Don't Stop Me Now by Queen. It's
brilliant, and I have actually got told off for trying to film in at the karaoke before, but this person obviously got away with it and got it out there. I think it's nice for people to let their hair down, and MPs are human as well. But it's the enthusiasm of Matt Hancock for that song that I love. He's absolutely in the moment. Now, Therese Coffey's a big fan of karaoke. she actually, in years gone by, has organised an annual Westminster karaoke in London. I think it might be Annabelle's, I'm not sure. But so she is a big karaoke fan, Therese Coffey. Some of her constituents might say that she should probably concentrate more on their issues rather than ABBA's Dancing Queen. But nonetheless, she is a fan of a sing-song. And her and Matt Hancock is well worth watching. Get onto the New European website and check it out.
Very much so. The idea of Matt Hancock floating around in ecstasy is quite something, isn't it?
Those karaoke's are a lot of fun. There's a media one as well, which is good. The main one tends to be at Labour, actually. It's a tradition, I think, that mainly came from Labour. And I got told off for trying to film Caroline Flint. There you go.
That wasn't just at the karaoke, though.
Yes, it was.
That was by the police. He said in his conference speech, Boris Johnson said, he quoted M People, didn't he? Mm. He said he had to search for the hero inside himself. And I think most people would rather see him moving on up and moving on out of number 10 Downing Street, wouldn't they? Elegant Slumming was the title of an M People album, which seems very apposite for Boris Johnson, I thought.
I'm sorry, but I can't abide the M People. And to think that they won a Mercury Music Prize is a shock to me.
I've got to say, if you enjoyed last week's guest Kevin Cummins, the noted rock photographer, and frankly, who wouldn't? He was excellent. Then one of his big mates is Mike Pickering out of the M People.
I'm not suggesting they aren't nice people, or indeed talented
musicians.
Mike Pickering
is a very nice man.
It's just not for me. It's just not for me.
It's not for me. It's not for me either. Boris Johnson also appeared on Andrew Marr, didn't he? And he said, they were talking about coronavirus, and he said, people say I've lost my mojo, and that's not true. He said, it would have been wrong of me to approach coronavirus with my usual buoyancy. And I thought, I don't really care which member of Destiny's Child you approach coronavirus with. Just sort it out. Just sort it out, man. Kelly, Michelle, anyway.
Imagine if he... Oh, I tell you what. What's that? Is it... It's I can't remember what the song's called, but it's the one, All the Single Ladies, All the Single Ladies. You know that one?
I think that's called Single Ladies.
Single Ladies. They dance around, don't they, in sort of leotards with high heels on. That's how they should open the press conferences with Whitty and the other fella and Boris in high heels. Yeah?
Yes.
Well, I mean, you'd watch it, wouldn't you?
Yes, you would. Yeah. I went to the in my capacity as a sports journalist. The last time I went to the Super Bowl was the year that Buoyancy was she did the halftime show. I'd not really written about American football for many years. I used to write about it all the time, and I'd not been for many years. But I went because it was the Super Bowl was held in New Orleans, which is my favourite city in America, and she was superb. The halftime show, where there was a Destiny's Child reunion, was really great. What was even better was it was not long after Barack Obama's inauguration. I think it might have been the second inauguration, actually. And Beyonce had sung the national anthem and had actually mimed to it. And there was a big, it was a couple of weeks after that. And, you know, there was a big sort of, you know, to and fro in the press about whether she'd actually mimed to it because the conditions were supposed to be very cold and they didn't think that the microphones would work and this had happened before and it happened in the test runs. Anyway, she ended up miming to it, and clearly there's a press conference that the artists do a couple of days before the Super Bowl, where I've seen sort of Michael Jackson do press conferences and stuff like that, and other weird people. And Beyonce came out, and she said, "Before we start, I just want to say this." And she sang a cappella the national anthem, and it was absolutely no perfect and spine chilling. And then at the end of it, she said, "Any questions?" And it was, man alive, that was a classy thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was a great...
That would have been 2013, I think, wouldn't it?
I think that's right, yeah. I can't remember what year the Michael Jackson one was, but I went to the press conference for that, and he was very quiet, and we were on a balcony. I mean, there were probably only less than 100 people there. It was not the big thing that it is now. There were probably about 100 people there, and Michael Jackson sort of made a few remarks from a microphone. And at one stage, and it was hard to hear him, as you can imagine, with Michael Jackson. He was a softly spoken fellow, wasn't he? And at one point, there was a sort of an annoying kind of dig in my ribs. I turned round, and a woman sort of went, "Can I get in front of you?" I was right at the front of the balcony. And I went sort of, "All right then." And it was. She said, "Oh, thanks very much." It was Gloria Estefan.
Wow. Was it in Miami then?
It was in, Los Angeles. It was in Pasadena. Yeah, it was the famous one where he did the halftime show. And
yeah, I remember it. Yeah,
on the giant, you know, atop he seemed to be dancing on top of one of the giant screens beforehand. So that was amazing. But yeah,
that was a good Super Bowl in 2013 as well. That was the Ravens Niners, wasn't it?
It was a great Super Bowl. The lights went for about half an hour. It certainly delayed the post-match entertainment for me.
No more NFL chat in
this. No, no more NFL chat. I was going to say Claire Fox has become a Baroness Fox of Buckley.
Yeah.
And Liam Fox has failed to become the new head of the WTO this week. And I just thought, who could have imagined that Lawrence Fox wouldn't even be the worst fox, or the second worst fox, actually the third worst fox. Liam Fox is amazing, isn't it? Did you see what Andrew Adonis tweeted about this?
I didn't.
He said maybe Liam Fox should retrain to be a musician.
Maybe. What would he play? Is he a drummer, do you think?
Well, he was close to Natalie Imbruglia, wasn't he, as he claimed? Do you remember
God,
that?
Yeah.
He was close friends with Natalie Imbruglia. Yeah, I think he's credited on her first album, isn't he? Not for playing, you know.
That's right.
Rhythm guitar and vibraphone.
Yeah, slide.
But he is. It's amazing, though, that he can't... You know, we've been snubbed for him being head of the WTO. I think we should just probably withdraw from the WTO now. We should start a campaign to leave the WTO, even though we're not even in it yet. And then we could sort of go forward into a bold trading future with Mars and Proxima Centauri and Kepler-425b and all these other undiscovered planets that have, you know.
Hey, we laugh about it, but crazier things have already happened this year.
Yes, indeed. And one more thing before we start talking about the imminent breakup of the world and all of that is that it's a bit of light relief. I think it does strictly start this week, or
I don't know. I've only accidentally watched Strictly once, and in doing so, guess who I spotted in the front row having a nice time?
Was it Beyonce? Or Gloria Estefan.
It was someone. It was Britain's own answer to Beyonce.
Oh, was it? Yeah. Victoria Beckham.
Therese Coffey.
Therese Coffey, you know.
Or as she really hates being called, Mrs. Teresa Coffey.
I bet she does.
Because she's Dr. Therese Coffey. Doctor.
She says, like the Ting Tings. That's not my name.
She should do that at karaoke. Therese Coffey.
Call me Teresa.
Mrs. Teresa Coffey should do. That's not my name.
Teresa. Jackie Smith is going on Strictly.
Ah.
She's the politician. And I couldn't help thinking that her husband would really have livened up movie week.
Oh, no.
So good luck.
She could dress as a gloved Wang.
Shall we talk about the imminent no deal situation?
Oh, if we have to.
Well, I know we sort of talk about this almost every week now, don't we? But the basically Bloomberg came out on Wednesday. Reports not been denied. It's a report that the UK government are going to pull out of Brexit negotiations next week if there is no clear deal in sight, according to a person familiar with the matter. Who could that be, do we think? David Frost? One of David Frost's underlings. Boris Johnson has said he wants the outlines of a deal to be clear by October the 15th, EU officials have said they won't be pressured into making concessions, prepared to call the Prime Minister's bluff, dare Johnson to walk away. A person familiar with the British position said Johnson's team would indeed pull the plug on talks if no clear landing zone for a deal has been identified by October the 15th. So October the 15th is next Thursday. And I'm guessing that the next time we speak to you, we may be about to leave with no deal.
I just think that there's a lot of... I think there is bluffs being called from both sides. And it is true, and I know that Brexiteers have said this for a while, but it is true that deals, EU deals, do tend to go right down to the wire. And I think that it seems that the British negotiators seem reasonably comfortable with that as well. If they're going to do all this, I just wish they'd really do it behind closed doors. I am concerned, as I've made very clear, you are concerned. I think a lot of people are concerned, but this kind of, the problem with politicians is, and we've seen this, well, there's lots of problems, but one of the great problems is that they play politics even when it's not really appropriate to play politics. And we've seen that this year at times with the response to coronavirus as well. This isn't a time for political brinkmanship. And what I want to know is, and I don't, you know, I'm not confident that this is the case, but what would make me more confident, even as an ardent Remainer, is that these people are doing their very best to get a deal. I hope that's the case. I think. You know, dates and false deadlines. And I'd honestly believe these are false deadlines, because if come the 16th of October and Boris has said, no, that's it, done, the EU then go, well, what about this? They won't ignore them. I mean, you know, it's been my view. I was talking to a colleague and friend earlier on about this, that this whole thing should have been paused anyway. I think we'll look back and realise what a huge mistake, if we do have no deal, what a huge mistake trying to negotiate one of the biggest trade deals in the history of forever was, while there's a global pandemic going on, I would have preferred everyone's mind to be firmly on that rather than on other things. And, you know, we have absolutely, once again, the government has absolutely missed the trick to take the heat out of this and go, I don't think anyone in March or April, apart from the most, you know, frothing at the mouth Brexiteers, would have had a go at Boris Johnson for pausing it. And I think the EU would have been up for it as well. And I just, you know, I think it's one of the litany of things that this government has got wrong this year. And the Tory party's continued obsession with Europe is disheartening when there's so much else going on and so much else that needs attention.
Well, what's really disheartening is the fact that there's so little comeback for their obsession with Europe. Okay, it kind of kept them out of power during the Blair years, didn't it, when he was allowed to sort of paint them as, it won him the election against Major, partly won him the election against Major, I lead my party, you follow yours, all of that kind of stuff.
But I think it will come back, Steve. It will come back and bite them in the arse because, you know, and this was partly how the conversation came up earlier on. I was saying, you know, the world's in chaos through no one's fault, really. Not talking about the response, obviously talking about the actual, you know, initial problem that is ongoing. But in the midst of all that, we're about to get loads more problems if we don't get a decent deal. Yes. And it's always the places that are the hardest hit, that have got the poorest demographic, that are going to suffer again. You know, the north of England, we've said for a long time, will suffer more from Brexit than perhaps anywhere else in the country. They're also suffering more than anyone else from coronavirus. And those things, I honestly do not see the red wall staying blue. I think perhaps not all of it will go straight back to Labour, but I think great swathes of it will. There was a fascinating vox pop that Radio 4 did. I think it was today, but it may have been PM earlier this week or at the end of last week, where they went and spoke to voters up in those areas. And I think out of the 10 or 15 people that they spoke to, only one said, no, I'd still back Boris Johnson. I still think he's doing a good job. Because things are starting to dawn on these people that he's not up to the job. I think the only chance of the Conservatives not losing great swathes of seats up there in the next election is if they've got if it's not Boris Johnson. I think it's highly unlikely it will be Boris Johnson, and maybe someone like Rishi Sunak or whatever could turn it round. But then, you know, we've not had much bad to say about Rishi Sunak thus far. He was pretty much an unknown this time last year. But he has made a misstep this week, hasn't he, with these comments on, we're getting off the EU breakup a little bit. But that was a misstep and a really silly thing to say. And he sounded like a tinier Tory, which is exactly what he doesn't want to sound like, when he said, you know, you people in the arts, why don't you retrain and do something else?
Yeah, I mean, he sort of said everyone should retrain and do something else.
Yeah. Musicians have sort of grabbed it. Yeah. And that's fine. You know, I think they've got every right to. I think also, you know, culture and the arts is a huge export in this country. And worth so much to our economy. Billions and billions and billions of pounds. I think it's something like £120 billion a year or something, isn't it? It's huge. And to just cast it aside and tell people to retrain, what, as a Deliveroo driver? Not that there's anything wrong with that, but what I'm saying is, what are they supposed to do? If suddenly, you know, you could be the most highly skilled person in your field, if that sector suddenly isn't there, I don't know. It was just very, very insensitive, I think. And
it was a rare misstep from.
You just wonder if the masks is slipped a little bit there. I was very disappointed with it.
Well, the masks are slipping all over the place, aren't they? Because people are at a time when, you know, this is when we're talking about lockdowns in the north, or at least pubs and restaurants shuttered in the north, and all this kind of stuff. And we've seen that the you know, that when anti-maskers say, well, it's just that, you know, it's about the same number of people that are dying from pneumonia and flu as die of COVID. And we've now seen, we saw on, I think it was Wednesday night, those stats were released that showed it's actually eight times the number of people that are dying from COVID that are dying from flu and pneumonia in the first 9 months of this year. And at a time when that is happening and the cases are increasing and deaths are sadly increasing as well, there is a great amount of, well, there's tiredness with the situation, isn't there, which is leading people to question whether the measures are right all along. And there is also the plight of people who are in the arts industry, which is something that's very close to my heart. And a lot of, I said before, a lot of my friends work in these kind of businesses, are musicians, or they put on gigs, or they own places where gigs are put on. You know, I think there's the pressure is building. Labour's response to this is going to be absolutely fascinating, which we'll see unroll over the next few weeks. Where's that? What, you know, what's the science behind this kind of stuff?
Well, it's, I mean, the confusion over the curfew, which is actually a big part of this argument as well for the hospitality industry. And I speak to a lot of people in the hospitality industry, you know, basically on a daily basis about this. And, you know, I heard from a source earlier in the week that there was definite moves towards ditching the curfew. But now here we are on Thursday afternoon, looking like we may be going down the same route as Nicola Sturgeon has done certainly in some parts of the country, yeah, whereby pubs, restaurants are going to close completely. And I'm not quite sure. I have to admit, I've got a strong Scottish heritage, and some of my, certainly my grandfather, I can imagine what he would have thought of a pub that doesn't sell alcohol being open. I don't think there's many people who go to pubs in Scotland for an iron brew. Or anywhere else. I certainly don't. It's very confusing, isn't it? I'm just in the middle of writing a piece, and it's chaos. You know, we've got number 11 saying get rid of the curfew, and number 10 perhaps considering that. But we've also got number 10 considering closing pubs and restaurants altogether. At the same time, you know, I spoke to someone from the wedding industry earlier on today who's saying, why can I not put on a wedding reception with more than, is it 30 people, I think, at a wedding or something? You know, why can we not put on a proper wedding reception when you could have 100 people in a pub? As long as it's table service, as long as they've got masks on when they leave, what is the difference? You know, I haven't got the answer. And the problem is, and yes, again, politicians are human, and this is an incredible rolling problem that needs to be tackled here. I don't want to underestimate that. This is tricky, and I'm not saying I could do any better, but nonetheless, they are voted and paid to do better than I would. And there's no uniformity in it. We're talking about traffic light systems. That's been around for a week and a bit now without it sort of going anywhere. It's been, the papers seem to know about it. I've had conversations with people about it, but nothing from number 10. Whatever happened to that 1-5 sort of DEFCON thing that they had? Is that still going?
That seemed to go, didn't it?
Then we add as long as the R8 stays below 1, we're fine. But as soon as it goes above 1, we're going straight back into full lockdown. That was mentioned. Well, it's between at the lowest, about 1.3, and at the highest, perhaps even as high as 1.7 now. You know, I do support local lockdowns, because I think it would be unfair on certain areas of the country that haven't, you know, where people aren't contracting it in the same numbers. But I do feel terribly bad for the parts of the country where house occupancy is higher, just the density of the population is higher, you know, where you are more, you know, you are more likely to catch a virus like this in a conurbation where there are lots of people than you are if you live out in the sticks. So there's got to be some leveling up, and I don't know how we do it. I haven't got the answers. I just feel, you know, my concern is that an already hugely divided country, thanks to a very divisive a nasty campaign around Brexit and all the fallout of that could become even more divided because of coronavirus. I don't have the answers. I really don't. God almighty, I wish I did.
It's a worrying situation, isn't it? And that's exactly what I mean. People are questioning this at the time of questioning the measures that have been taken for good reason. They're questioning them, but they're questioning them at a very dangerous time. And we've seen this week, haven't we, that people are saying, "Well, why can't we have fans in football? We can have 3,500 people in the Royal Albert Hall at Christmas, which is a 5,000 capacity, and we can have I think the O2 in London is that 8,000? It might be eight or 9,000, and they can have 4,500 in there. So they're saying, "Well, why can't we have why can't you have 5,000 people at Old Trafford, or 10,000 people?"
Well, you could have more than that. I mean, you could do. I mean, without wanting to mention that American sport again, there are some fans back in some of those games, very sparsely, but if you take the average football stadium, which probably what in the top two divisions about 25,000, something like that. Now, if you had people sat, if you had groups no bigger than six, and you have to prove that you're a household or whatever, and then you could easily socially distance 5,000-6,000 people in a stadium of that size, couldn't you?
You would have thought so. That's right.
So what's the issue? And the clubs are absolutely desperate, obviously, to get fans back in. And you, as a Manchester City fan, Steve, and others out there who support big clubs like Man United or Liverpool, will be desperate for that as well, because it seems something very strange is happening in the Premier League without fans, doesn't it?
It certainly does, yeah.
I think Huddersfield Town fans, even who are high support, even if they were allowed back in the stadium, might think twice. But social distancing has never been a massive issue for us.
But it's especially important, isn't it, for clubs in the Championship and League One and
League Two. I'm not worried about the big clubs, but because if you think of the hit that
match day attendance is so important to them, and I don't know.
Do you think, actually, while we're on this topic, do you think that the Premier League should have to bail out clubs further down?
Well, I think it does some stuff already, probably not enough. I think it should have to do some stuff, but does Wagamama have to bail out the local, the local Chinese or the local Thai? Well, it doesn't, does it? That's the
restaurant? Sorry, what restaurant have to bail out?
Sorry,
what restaurant did you say?
I said Wagamama.
You said Wagamama.
Wagamama.
Is that the posh way to say Wagamama?
That's how we say it. People of my social standing.
If the people really of Wagamama would like to sponsor this podcast.
Do you like Wagamama?
I do. My kids love Wagamama. It's great. I love it. And they've got some really cool social distancing things in there.
Yeah. I've got to say, I don't think it's as good as it used to be, but there you go.
Maybe you should have the charcoal noodles with corn.
Maybe one day we'll do a podcast about how Pizza Express pizzas aren't as big as they used to be, and then somebody will go, yes, they are. It's just the plates that have got smaller and all of that.
we'll do that next week.
Bringing it back to no deal, I just find it extraordinary that at a time when lives and businesses are at risk, we're going to put more, Boris Johnson is going to put more lives and businesses at risk just rather than make two or three concessions to the EU and face down opposition from the ERG and from Nigel Farage. I just think that is amazing. I mean, it still might happen. Boris Johnson, by the way, who a year ago in Dublin said, "I've looked very carefully at no deal. It would represent a failure of statecraft." And he is the guy who put in David Frost, who is basically just saying no. And I tell you something, I'm going to read you an interesting quote now. Because we can argue all day about who is most to blame about a potential no deal. You know, the EU are being a bit unreasonable about some things. Their demands about fishing, I think, are unreasonable. The point is that we knew that the EU were going to be unreasonable. I'm just going to read you something now that I read this week, and I don't know, can you get, if you can guess who said this, but this is a point that we, this was one of the reasons that we were against, that we were pro-Remain in the first place. I am scared that you will suffer now. England made the choice for passion and the desire for sovereignty, and I can understand that. It was not a rational decision, but I'm scared that you will pay for it. Europe will have to make it hard for Britain, or everyone will want to leave. They have no choice. I know Barnier. He said from the first day that he would make it tough. Do you know who said that?
I have read those words before, but I can't actually remember exactly who said it. Boris Johnson, I guess.
That was an interview with Arsene Wenger that was in the Times magazine at the weekend, and it's stunning.
That's where I've read it. Yeah,
Remain said this from the start. There would be, you know, as I think Boris Johnson said, the idea of punishment beatings or whatever. You know, the EU would not give Britain, was never going to give Britain an easy deal, if Britain left. And was always going to make an example of Britain, and was always going to be unreasonable. And now we're, and we said this all along, and Leave said, no, they won't. They need us more than we need them.
Should we feel angry?
At the start of coronavirus, people like Nigel Farage and other people in the Tory party, were saying this will make it, we'll get a great deal now. This will make it much easier. They'll need us, they'll need to do a deal with us now. No, they won't. They will make it as difficult as possible.
Should we feel angry at the EU for taking that stance?
Well, I mean, I think it's a big gamble from the EU, because it is going to, there is going to be, if not mutually assured destruction, then mutually assured damage, isn't there? Yeah. It is going to damage them. But it will, what means more to them?
And again, I've said this before, I was no great fan of the way the EU was run, and I think it needed reform, and that's why I wanted to stay in Europe, in order to see if we could make it better than it was. And I'm no great fan of, I think sometimes Remainers have, over the past 4 or 5 years, have become a bit sort of rose-tinted glasses about the EU. It has its failings, it had its failings, it will continue to have its failings, much like every government or organization has. And I think that on both sides during the negotiations, I've been disappointed with the way they've been handled. I don't think anyone has covered themselves in glory. I think there are some fine politicians in the EU, and I think it's as an overarching concept of how civilized progressive humans can live close to one another, geographically and otherwise, I think it's a brilliant project and a brilliant idea. But not all of them are there for not the right reasons. That's not correct. I'm not saying that. But not just being a European politician doesn't make you a good politician. And there are some crap ones. Both on our side and otherwise.
Yeah. Before we move on, worth noting that, David Frost, Michael Gove have been talking about this prospect. They were talking about it on Thursday. They are talking, they seem to be talking about, well, even if we don't get a deal, there are still grounds for optimism, they're saying, but even if we don't get a deal, we can keep some talks on practical matters going to January the 1st and beyond. Maybe there will be some kind of managed no deal, like they said. And, I think Britain, from what David Frost is saying, Britain may be prepared to give way a little bit on state aid, but whether that is going to be enough for the EU, I very much doubt it.
Yeah.
Something that I picked up this week, and you will have dealt with this as a political journalist over the years, is the meaningless things that a politician say. Now, I've written about this in the print edition of the New European this week. Just as a large bin lorry draws up outside my home studio here, guaranteed to be noise, large amounts of noise coming. But Therese Coffey, who we've mentioned before, karaoke fan, was on the Today programme on Monday morning. She was questioned about the 16,000 missing COVID cases. And she said, they said, what do you think of that? And she said, we cannot change the past. We can only change the future. And
I mean, that is mitigation for pretty much everything, isn't it?
Well, it is, yeah.
Are you not guilty of this murder? Well, I can't change the past.
Exactly. I can only change the future. It did make me wonder whether where she'd picked it up from, whether it was from one of those sort of inspirational greeting cards that you with the sunsets on them or rainbows.
Oh, my God. I bet her Facebook is full of that crap, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. Or whether it was something, she's secretly a sort of Marvel fan, and it was something like, you know, a character said just before they died, and whether, you know, she will, the next thing that she will say will be something like, you know, she'll the next time she appears on the Today programme, they'll say, well, you know, why is the furlough scheme being shut down? And she'll say, remember that with great power comes great responsibility, and we need to let our light shine so brightly that others can see their way out of the dark. And then she'll just end by saying, Wakanda forever. in a time when Boris Johnson has said that the nation has got to behave fearlessly with common sense, I think it's amazing that Therese Coffey has come out with a statement even more nebulous and meaningless than that. And
I'm not surprised at all by anything Therese Coffey says.
No, there you go. I wondered what are your, you know, I've listed about 30 of these things that politicians say and what they really mean. I wonder what your favourites are. What's a thing that politicians say to you when you know that they are buying time to think of an answer or just wasting time? Or
the one that all journalists hear, and it started in politics and it's still a thing in politics, but you now get it from press officers and things. It became a sort of catch-all for I'm not going to do my job, which is answering your questions, and the easy get out is for me to say I will not be giving a running commentary.
Yes.
Well, actually, that's kind of your job. You know, we get that all the time now, and it is it's just an absolute nonsense. We will not be giving a running commentary. Well, you know, that is the one that really, really, I really, really hate. I mean, this is one that I've been taught as well when being questioned on stuff. Commenting on what a good question it is.
Yeah.
That is a really good question. What an excellent question. Let me see if I can get to.
I'm glad you asked me answer. That.
It's
a variant on that, isn't it?
Because
has anyone ever said, let me be clear or let me be very clear and then gone on to be clear about anything?
No. No one's ever done that.
I really like, when, and Priti Patel says this quite a lot, at the end of the day,
it gets dark.
At the end of the day, and you just think, at the end of the day, I will be free of your tiresome questioning, drinking scotch, and you, my interviewer, will be back in your hovel eating some beans. No one could have predicted this, apart from the people who did predict it. I like, I'm sorry if, that's another Priti Patel one, isn't it? I'm sorry if, which means I'm not sorry. I really like, now is not the time to answer that. When is the time to answer that? I think it's the 13 o'clock on the 12th of never.
Yeah, I think only if you've burst into said politician's bathroom while they're sat on the toilet taking a dump would, now is not the time to answer that, be an appropriate answer.
I don't want to preempt what the Prime Minister will say later. That's a good one. I think that means he's not thought of it yet. We are where we are. What does that mean?
That is, in a literal sense, just a really rubbish Google Map reference, I guess.
Yeah, we are where we are. I think we're up shit creek. We just lost the paddle. We've got a raft of ideas. That's just behind us on Shit Creek. And it's taken we've introduced a package of measures, which I think means that we've just got a load of real subprime guff together from the cutting room floor, and then we've welded it together to give the appearance of a coherent whole. And it's a bit like the groups that you get on Little Mix The Search. let's face the future. Better than facing yes. The fact of the matter is, none of this that I'm going to say now is fact, and I don't think it matters. I also like, we've got a long-term economic plan, which means this is going to be terrible for 10 years, but you know, 15 years, trust me, stick around. There are loads more of these in the print edition of the New European. Check it out. I did think, lessons will be learned is good.
Lessons will be learned.
A lesson from this. We're going to learn a lesson from this, and the lesson will be we will not get caught next time. We can't change the past. We can only change the future. Teresa Coffey said that, and I think that the real meaning of that is, please stop focusing on all the things that we've done badly beforehand, and let me get on with doing them badly in the years to come.
So check it
out. It's in the print edition of the New European. If you've got any more terrible things that politicians say that wind you up, please do share them with us. You can leave comments on this podcast, of course, or I'm at Sanglesey on Twitter, SANGLESEY. I think I've almost got enough for a sequel. Which will come out in the next print edition of the New European. But
that would be great.
Meaningless things politicians say.
I've long watched Therese Coffey. Just to finish off this particular section before we do Brexit of the Week, I have long watched Therese Coffey's career. In fact, since she first became an MP in 2010, I have closely watched her career. And she was actually my MP for a little while. And our paths have crossed on numerous occasions. And I have to say, it says a lot about the talent in this government that she has got a ministerial role. But what I also would say is that I think Number 10 are fully aware of that as well, from what I hear. So watch that space.
Watch this space.
I would suggest that we take a little breather, Steve, before we get into the really fun section of crowning a Brexiteer of the Week.
From true crime to football, Brexit to folklore. For more great podcasts from Archant, head to audioboom.com/channel/Archant.
Welcome back, Steve. Please do tell us who the Brexiteers of the Week are this week.
Well, we'll start, unsurprisingly enough, with Anne Widdecombe.
Alack!
I wasn't going to mention the stuff that was in the Mail on Sunday at the weekend, just because I thought it was a bit, you know, I mean, it's a bit sort of gossipy, isn't it? I'm not entirely surprised that Stanley Johnson doesn't appear to be the amiable buffoon that he likes to.
You know what? I was disappointed with that because I knew that was coming, and I thought, yeah, it didn't really. I agree with you. It was, I mean, obviously it's a very serious accusation, and I wouldn't want to take anything away from that. But I was, I was a bit disappointed with that, I have to say.
But Anne Widdecombe has got, as you imagine, she's often got a fresh take on these things, hasn't she? I mean, people who are regular listeners will remember that she reviewed the Des a couple of weeks ago, the excellent miniseries with David Tennant as Dennis Nielsen, and she was, her area of most concern about it was that, well, she praised it highly, didn't she? Because she liked the number of people smoking in it. Which she thought was incredible realism for the time. Anne Widdecombe in the Daily Express: Boris Johnson is a prime minister coping with a nationwide plague, an economic meltdown and a new baby to boot, and he's obviously still affected by the disease itself. Is this really the right moment for his mother to allege that his father once broke her nose? To be fair to Mrs. Johnson, the first Mrs. Johnson, Her comments appear in a biography of her son written by a third party. She probably made them before the outbreak of his present problems, but whenever she made them, she would have known that it would do him nothing but harm and cause nothing but distress. She is hurting her own children. So there you go. It's the woman who allegedly had her nose broken by her husband who is to blame rather than the...
Yeah, what despicable,
who,
despicable.
Who broke the nose. Remarkable. Charles Moore, we talked about him. Yeah. Last couple of podcasts, I'm absolutely delighted that the Telegraph columnist who hates the BBC has withdrawn from the running to be the chair of the corporation's board. He says it's for family reasons. His own paper, though, reported that the BBC would have had to inflate the salary it pays its chairman to at least £280,000 to attract him to the role. Now, the current BBC board chair takes home £100,000, and that means that 1,142 licence fees would have been needed to top up the salary to the extent that Charles Moore's supporters apparently believe that he is deserving of. £280,000 for a largely ceremonial role.
Yeah.
Is quite remarkable. Charles Moore, of course, wanted the licence fee abolished himself and replaced with a free choice for consumers. And you've just got to say, how many of those consumers asked the question with no licence fee, what would you like to spend your money on? How many of them would have elected to pay Charles Moore 280,000 quid rather than fund things like Radio 1 and Radio 2, which bring pleasure to millions of people, but not to Charles Moore? He wanted to scrap them. James Cleverly, he's been quiet recently, hasn't he, James Cleverly? Mm-hmm. He's actually got a job, James Cleverly, now. He was the Tory vice chair, wasn't he?
I think he has. But you're right, I haven't heard of him for ages.
Job. He was on BBC Breakfast, James Cleverly. He was asked to explain why Boris Johnson is doing a good job, despite the fact that a YouGov poll had just come out with 57% of voters saying he's doing a bad one. James Cleverly, Cleverly Clogs, had the sheer brass balls to say, we are still getting on with things that we said we would do to repair the country that we inherited from Labour. Labour Party were last in power over 3,800 days ago. We have had a decade and three prime ministers since. And he is still blaming Gordon Brown for the state of the country.
He isn't the co-chairman anymore.
But
he is the Minister of State for the Middle East and North Africa.
Is he?
Yeah.
Is he? And have you seen, by the way, that is a highly prestigious position. And have you seen Daniel Kaczynski? Have you seen his new highly privileged position?
Tell me.
The Brexiteer Daniel Kaczynski, MP for Shrewsbury, he is now our trade envoy to Mongolia. That stuff about people finding their just reward in life is their level. He's the trade envoy to Mongolia. Incredible stuff. But the Brexiteer of the week is Nigel Farage. Nigel Farage, he's not been Brexiteer of the Week for a little while. He's separated from Donald Trump by The Atlantic and by COVID-19, but he's still able to flick his little nicotine-stained froggy tongue out all the way over there towards the capacious rear end of Donald Trump. Oh, by the way, while we're talking about Donald Trump, you must read, an European podcast listener, humour books as I do, and if you like crime books as I do, you've got to read Squeeze Me by Carl Hyerson. Just come out. It's got Donald Trump and Melania Trump in it. It is very, very funny. It's a very brisk read. Squeeze Me by Carl Hyerson, crime book set in Florida. Absolutely hilarious. Donald Trump's, what a week he's had. Nigel Farage thinks it's been a triumph for Donald Trump this week. He's beginning a series of lucrative media appearances as we head towards the US election. It's only about 3.5 weeks away now, isn't
it?
It's wonderful. Nigel Farage has described Joe Biden's supporters as awful and intolerant people, to which you have to say, pot, meat, kettle. while he's done that, he has heaped praise on Donald Trump, who's obviously you know, he's had a disastrous week, hasn't he? Which is shown by the polling. He has said Donald Trump will now own the COVID agenda and he will neutralise Joe Biden on this issue. And I think, you know, you only have to look at the way that Boris Johnson has neutralised Keir Starmer on the COVID issue since getting COVID, to show that that is absolute nonsense. Farage wrote a column for The Telegraph. He said Trump is going to turn disaster into triumph. He talked about Trump's motorcade and quick return from hospital to the Oval Office. And he said, which other leader in the Western world would do this? And the answer is no other leader in the Western world would do this, because no other leader in the Western world is as insane as Donald Trump. And then he popped up again on the Christopher Hope podcast, Telegraph podcast. I think it's called Chopper's podcast, isn't it? It's very good. Yep. He said, Donald Trump has done his absolute damnedest to keep all his election promises. That's one of the things about him that really impresses me. And it's true that he's kept all of his election promises. And I know that because Hillary Clinton recently tweeted that from prison while she was looking at a 2,000-mile wall, which was paid for by the Mexicans. So Donald Trump is an idiot. Nigel Farage is the Brexiteer of the week. And I want to end on a note of hope in that, you know, all right, he's going to have to, Joe Biden is not a great candidate and he's going to have to win by 3 or 4 points nationally anyway to have any chance of winning the White House. But in the last poll, the CNN poll, he's 16 points up.
Yeah.
You know, dare we dream, dare we hope that this tide of darkness and nonsense is going to lift slightly in the next 3-4 weeks. With Donald Trump being sent back to Trump Tower. God, it'd be marvellous, wouldn't it?
It certainly would. And yes, those polls are looking very good. I just, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, wonderful to see Kamala Harris, who is, you know.
She was brilliant.
I think she's a class act, and she wiped the floor with Mike Pence, just as we all expected that she would.
Do you think, and I think she's done Biden the world of good, and do you think that maybe some Americans are thinking there's our next president?
I think that's right. I think she.
And you know, if Biden spends 4 years priming her to be as such, that could. And we talked last week about him being a bridging candidate. It could actually work. I know I was a bit dubious about that, but it could actually work. I've been very impressed, impressed with her.
She was great. And the next debate is going to be a virtual debate, which is the right decision. I think that's coming up. Is it coming up next Tuesday? I think it might be.
Sometime next week, I believe. We can talk about that on the podcast next week. Virtual.
How is he going to interrupt virtually?
Well, I manage it with you.
That's true. It's good though, isn't it? Because he does with his new tan, his amazing new spray tan that he's had since leaving hospital. Because he's obviously still quite ill, isn't he? Gasping for breath,
And here's me interrupting that incredible bit of VT where he sort of rips the mask off. Like,
oh man!
I mean, and then like you say, it looked like he was gasping for breath. I think that what had actually happened is they'd said to him, take some nice deep breaths so everyone knows that you're healthy and you're breathing normally. And of course, he can't do anything normally. So it was a bit like when we used to go on around a smile, you know what I mean? he used to do that weird thing with his face. I think that's what it was. I think he was trying to prove, look at my big, deep lungs, the biggest, deepest lungs anyone has ever come across. I loved that thing when they checked my DNA. I didn't have any. I had USA.
Oh God! Oh,
if you don't laugh, Steve, you will cry. What should the listener do right now?
The listener should subscribe to this podcast. If you don't subscribe to already, you should leave a great review on your podcatcher of choice. You should say Wagamama, not Wagamama. You should buy the print edition of the New European. It's in shops now. Mass test dummies on the front.
They're really good.
Another great cover by Chris Barker. The picture of The mock-up of Matt Mancock, as a crash test dummy is one of the highlights of the week. If you go to the New European website, www.theneweuropean.co.uk, it's a great new website, really fast, by the way. You can get subscribe, if you subscribe via the New European website, £6 a month for the print edition for the first 3 months, then it's £8 a month thereafter. I mean, look, it's £3 an issue, so that's £12 a month at least normally. You're going to get it for £6 a month for the first 3 months, then £8 a month thereafter. You can go to tneshop.co.uk. We've got lots of face masks. We've got passport holders, Remainer passport holders to cover up your awful new blue passport. We've got all of that kind of stuff. You can join our Facebook readers group. You can just follow us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at The New European. And like I said before, you can follow me on Twitter at Sanglesey, S-A-N-G-L-E-S-E-Y. Tell me what meaningless politicians' phrases really wind you up.
Or you can follow me on Twitter at Porritt, P-O-R-R-I-T-T, which leaves only one thing for me to say. We will be back next week. Until then, Mr. Campbell, play your bagpipes.
Here you go.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.